Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Core Health Collective show. Today my guest is kind of a long-term friend, but last like 4 or 5 years become a friend, in full disclosure, also a business partner in what he's doing with his life work. His name is Dr. Brian Mahoney, and he is in Kingston, Ontario, and he is an amazing doctor and now an amazing entrepreneur. So super happy to have you here, Brian. Welcome.
Thanks, Ben. I'm excited about this. Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock. Hoping to just have a nice conversation with you as we usually do, and maybe share a few things with your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure usually to be here. It's like at a Starbucks or at our office, but it's funny, we're like 2 kilometers away for our American listeners, about a mile away, and we're on Zoom because it's a great place to record.
It's a virtual world out there. It's a great place to do business too.
Yeah,
maybe absolutely. We'll get into that.
Yeah, I think we will. So thanks for coming on the show. This is like long overdue for sure. I'm not even sure why, but the moment I was saying like, who do I want to have on the show this year? I was like, oh, well, Brian, of course. And I was like, well, why didn't I have him on the show last year? Anyway, so you're here now, which is great. You've got a product called Prehab MD. I am a minority investor in the company because I believe in what you're doing so much, and I believe all the good that it's going to do for future customers, clients, patients, however we want to term it. But before we get into like the solution that you've created for the world, let's talk about your background a little bit and how you arrived at the problem that prehabilitation solves. And probably, I'm guessing we should just ground everybody with what prehabilitation is eventually. But why don't we start with kind of like your journey to where you are today?
Sure. As you know, I struggle sometimes being brief. So if I get too long-winded here, Ben, just reel me in as you normally do.
I don't know. I'm thinking, what's this signal? I will scratch my head.
Sure, sure. My eyes haven't left you yet. Yeah. So yes, I am a physician. I live in Kingston, Ontario. I started my training in Nova Scotia. I did my medical school in Nova Scotia. I traveled to Kingston for my residency in family medicine and then added some anesthesiology training to that. Met my wife here in Kingston and decided to stay in this area. Started my career up north. All my training's been designed sort of for small town, small community medicine. That's sort of the area I grew up. That's always where I pictured practicing. Started my area, my practice up north in Cochrane, returned to Kingston a few years later, and I've been here raising my family now for the last almost 20 years. My practice leading up to this venture, I'll just mention a few things. I would be what you'd call a generalist versus a specialist. So I've practiced in family medicine. I don't do that anymore. I've practiced in emergency medicine in smaller community hospitals. Most of the emergency docs are family docs. I've practiced in anesthesiology, and I did some addiction medicine training and practice about 10 years ago before I started having kids. We have 3 lovely kids now, and when they came along, I really narrowed my focus. So I've been predominantly practicing anesthesiology for the last 10 or 12 years. I've also been interested in sort of prevention throughout my sort of journey through in medicine, been interested in health, probably more than disease, been interested in nutrition, been interested in fitness. And that's why when I discovered this concept of surgical prehabilitation, I really thought, wow, this is this could work for me. I could have fun with this.
Yeah, can I interject, Brian, just for absolutely. The listeners, because I just want to ground them a little bit more of before you get in the next part of something that I have seen in you that I really admire. And of all the many, many people that I know with MD at the end of their name, you are by far the most curious about just general health that I have ever met. And I love that about you. And as you said that, you know, as you continue through your career, you got more curious about, or you said interested, I'm using the word curious, but you said interested in prevention and interested in health and in fitness and in nutrition. And I, like, again, I'm using the word curious, but that's one of the things I really love about you that I don't see across the board in medicine. And that's not a knock about anybody else. That's a compliment to you. And I think I'm not surprised that you have arrived where you have based on your, you know, your genuine curiosity about, you know, what it is to live a great life.
I just think I get bored really easily, Ben.
I'm giving you a big compliment. You're like, I'm just
no, super thank you bored. For that. Both comments are true, actually. I do find, after a few years in sort of a certain domain, medicine's such a fantastic career and anyone in the healthcare space. I mean, there's so much to learn. It's evolving so fast. It's so interesting to stay up to date. It can be so challenging to stay up to date, and I found, there was a period in my career when sort of the infants, toddlers, diaper stage, where I would go to work and I would actually say, I'm happy to have a nice, boring day. That period only lasted a few years. And then, once the kids are all running around and I'm not as sleep deprived anymore, I'm sort of back to my, let's really, what can we do? I think anyone in the healthcare field who's really invested in patient care, like, what can I really do to help the person in front of me? I think it almost always leads back to these sort of concepts, like prevention, like exercise, like nutrition, regardless of the field you're in. I mean, so much of what we do in medicine is reactionary care. It's sort of downstream work. And so much of the diseases we see, we wouldn't really have to be dealing with them. A lot of this, we probably, there's a lot to be said about, how our overcapacity in our system right now. And really, if we addressed some of the fundamental, core issues, leading to these downstream effects, and so anytime I'm sitting with anyone, and they're in front of me and I'm looking them in the eyes and I'm talking about whatever issue it is, and they're about to approach, a major surgery and they have cancer maybe, and there's some health issues. Like it in my mind, anything, the prevention part of it is just a core, always been a core part of it. And it's not a core part of our training. It's not really a core part of our, the time or resources that we invest in Canada on prevention, sort of lifestyle type aspects of medicine. It is not really there, but I've always embraced it. And, when I discovered this area, we're going to talk more about prehabilitation, but when I discovered this area, I sort of thought, it would be great if someone else really did this. And I was, it was a sort of a new evolving field. And then there's a little piece of me that kind of thought, this looking back now, it's probably my midlife sort of, I won't say crisis, my midlife, I needed a bit of a change. And there was a sense of, a responsibility of calling, let's say, not from a religious point of view, but like, if someone needs to step up and someone needs to educate people on the role of getting in shape before surgery, on the role of nutrition before surgery, on the role of stress reduction before surgery, why don't I do it? I know the perioperative world.
Brian, sorry to interrupt. I think that, we can look back at so many founder stories for their companies. And I hear the vast majority are started by the founder one day saying, why doesn't this exist? Or why isn't somebody doing this? Or who can do this? Like, somebody else should have done this or should do this. And then when they get frustrated enough that nobody's done it, nobody's going to do it, that's when they step up and they become a founder of their company.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. That passion, going through this journey, I forget if you told me this quote. Someone told me years ago about founding a company and startups. You need two things. You need passion and you need ignorance. Passion to sort of get you going, and the ignorance meaning like you'd never actually start it if you really knew what it was all about and the amount of work and the amount of effort required to even try to get a startup off the ground. And the passion I still have, and it's we're now 4 or 5. And we got slowed down a little bit with the pandemic. You know, lost maybe a year and a half or so of work. I got sort of involved with more hospital clinical aspects of my work. But you know, back at this now, it's a 4 or 5 year journey, and it's still about, you know, trying to juggle, you know, my time and dedicating, you know, what I can to this, which is, it's a fight because this is what I'm still passionate about. The other things I do, you know, going to work, putting people to sleep, you know, that pays the bills. That's still important, but this is where my passion lies.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing. So I know you've got an amazing slide deck on this with one specific slide, with a very simple, like line going up and so maybe let's talk about the problem. What is the problem that you faced? And let's talk about the problem for, how it affects the patient and the system. Cause I think that's important too, right? The doctors. So yeah. Let's talk about the problem and then I'm excited to let everybody know about the solution.
So the problem, there's a few problems here, really. The problem for the patient is anyone requiring major surgery. Major surgery is a high stakes venture. Like there's a prolonged recovery period after major surgery. There's complications that can happen after major surgery. It can take a very long time to get back to baseline. Some people die after major surgery, more than we like to think sometimes. And it's a very stressful, you know, period of time for people. In particular, if you throw cancer into that as well, you know, if they're just had a colonoscopy, been diagnosed with a colon cancer, you know, and they're driving home from the hospital and they realize, geez, now I have cancer. I don't know if it's spread yet because I don't have my CAT scan yet. I don't really know what this means. And the doctor's telling me I need major surgery, which I've never had before. You know, that's a very tough time for people. The problem with the system is related to prehabilitation. So this, you know, a lot of smart people before me, researchers and people who developed this field over the last 10 or 15 years have realized, well, there's certain things we can do in the hospital to decrease all those risks and decrease your length of stay and decrease mortality rates and decrease complications. And we're very good at those, but we've in some ways almost saturated what we can do. And other people started looking at, well, what can the patients do? You know, what can we do before surgery to prepare them for this major stress that we know they're going to have on their body? You know, this is like a planned car crash. If you knew you were going to have a car crash 6 weeks down the road and you're going to have to recover from that, are there certain things that you could do to prepare for that? Very similar. Surgery is a major stress in the body. It takes a lot of time to recover. So what if we prepare the body for that? What if we build up a little bit of muscle mass? What if we build up your cardiovascular fitness a little bit so you can handle the anesthetic and major surgery more? What if we build up your nutritional reserve? What if we build up? So, and there's a few pieces of it. So it's really about building up your physical fitness and your mental fitness, you know, dealing with the anxiety or depression part related to this and improving your outcomes after surgery. So that evidence is evolving. It's a new field. It's fascinating. It's nice to see this stuff from the scratch, small studies getting bigger and bigger and bigger and better evidence in different surgical populations. But the next major problem that I see is the implementation issue. So just because we know something, you know, in medicine, a new drug, a new technique, a new approach, there's a massive, massive research to practice gap. So this, you know, how do we implement it? How do we bring it, get it in front of the people who need it most? And I started off on that journey. I thought, this is what we're trained to do in medicine. We're, I'll be the local champion, you know, down in my community hospital. And I'll, you know, we'll do this in the hospital and we'll bring people to us. And this will be run like cardiac rehab. And this is what the research was suggesting. You know, and it'll be expensive and it'll be Monday to Friday and it'll be, you know, unionized jobs and the patients will come to us and there'll be waiting lists and there'll be, you know, that's how we do things in medicine. And, you know, over, you know, the next 20 years, maybe all these little hospitals and bigger hospitals across North America could have a local champion like me come in and try to get a program set up in their site. Then the pandemic hit and that changed everything. And, you know, there's a bunch of pieces leading up to my thought process here. But generally, I thought, this is dumb. this is, there's got to be a better way to do this. There's
got
to be a more efficient way to do this. And this should be online. And we don't need someone in every hospital across North America becoming a local champion, trying to get space, trying to get money, trying to get resources, trying to bring patients to the hospital. These days, we're trying to do things at home. We're trying to get patients out of hospital. And this is just, there's going to be so many barriers to this. This should be online. And that's when the real sort of, you know, company idea started. And that's when you got involved to help, you know, guide me through all this process. And
well, I love the humility and the pivot. So like, you know, there's many companies that could work, but if they can't make that pivot at the right time, as they learn about, you know, what's actually feasible for the business and what the customer actually wants, you know, they fail. And, you know, you not only made a pivot, you're literally reflecting back on it, thinking like, there was a moment where I thought this is so dumb. And yeah, I love that about you for sure. The great humility, and you're definitely on a good track now. So, tell us what came of that. Like what's the solution that you have for the world?
Well, so we thought, you know, there's fitness programs online. I hear they're booming. There's nutrition programs online. Some of them are certainly booming. There's sort of mindset type, you know, psychological programs online. You know, it's a great platform for scaling and for delivering, you know, content and programs to lots of people all over the world. So I thought, you know, why not bring you know, a prehabilitation program online. We can bring it right to the living rooms of, you know, those people who need it. We can bring it to their family members who want to support them through this program. You know, it doesn't rely on sort of a staff at a hospital in a building that people have to drive to and park and register and get on a waiting list and have an appointment at a certain time of day. You know, they could start this immediately the night of their colonoscopy. They could be online learning about prehabilitation and things they can do. So a lot of this is about empowering people to, you know, take control of their own health. A lot of the components are not much different than other sort of lifestyle interventions. You know, people have diabetes or people with obesity, you know, there's similar sort of nutritional interventions, you know, physical activity, exercise interventions, you know, sleep components to it. There's a lot of different domains in medicine and health and wellness where we use these components. This program is specifically, you know, tailoring them to, you know, where the evidence directs us to what is going to help people most that they can do at home on their own, you know, with or without supervision. You know, they can still go to the gym if they're a gym member and have a trainer help them with this, or they can just do it at home with some resistance bands if that's all they have access to and they're in a small community that doesn't even have a gym. So really, we've built an online sort of program for people who require major surgery and their family members. We actually have a support program for sort of loved ones as well. That's a mix of education, because a lot of the anxiety component towards people approaching surgery for the first time in particular just requires some education. And then there we have sort of four different coaches providing actual material, mostly video based, on the sort of the program. So, yeah, that's sort of what we've built. And at this stage, we've launched last year, and we're sort of in our product market fit stage, I would say now. Yeah,
that's amazing. So, like, most businesses don't get this far. It's amazing. I'm super happy to be watching everything that you're doing and being involved in building it. I think our audience right now is thinking, wow, what a story. He's a doctor. He saw a problem. It wasn't solved, you know, in the medical system the way that he thinks it could be. And so he did something about it, like, amazing. And now he's got this product that's all built and out there into the world, working on product market fit. And why couldn't anybody do it? So let's talk about some of the things that you were unaware of. What's been harder than you thought? Let's say that. And then, you know, we can even include, if you could go back to your, you know, if you could go in a time machine three or four years back, what would you tell yourself?
Yeah. I mean, this was, it's almost humorous now. This was a pretty ambitious project when I look back. I sort of anticipated maybe a third of the work. I've worked hard most of my career. I work evenings, I work nights, I work weekends. I've spent about a third of the last, 22 years on call, carrying a pager, going in whenever I have to work. I've put in, long weeks, long months, long years of work. And but this is it's almost never ending, how much work you could put into a project like this. I really struggled initially with the concept of I really liked the idea of the lean startup sort of literature, and it fit sort of my scientific approach to this. Let's validate some of our hypotheses about this, and let's start small and build it up. And they have a concept called the minimum viable product, the MVP. If you want to get into the selling cakes, you start by selling cupcakes, and you test it on a certain market, and you find a cupcake that people like, and then you turn it, you build cakes and you sell it to them. And I struggled in sort of medicine. I'm like, these people are having surgery. Some of them are going to die. Some of them have cancer. I can't build like a tiny little. So the minimum viable part was it probably wasn't so minimal. I wanted more. I certainly my initial vision was trimmed quite a bit in terms of the components, the modules, the content that I wanted on it, but it took a lot of time to build what I thought was, if we're going to put this out in the world and have this in front of real patients, requiring real surgeries. It's got to at least be at a certain threshold that I was comfortable with of sort of maturity. So that was one of the first major hurdles that I sort of had. The balancing the time, funding this venture, that it took more money than I thought to get to the point we're at. Balancing the time, how much I work clinically. I have a fantastic job. I make great money when I show up and work clinically, so balancing how much do I work on this project, which is being paid for by my clinical work, work more clinically, can fund more into this project. But if I'm, the person doing most of this project, I need to be not working so much. And so that was sort of, that's an ongoing struggle. That's probably a struggle for anyone in the startup world who doesn't, come from a who's not starting their venture with a big nest egg of money.
Especially as a side hustle,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And
You
yeah,
know, and then
it's a challenge.
I talk to people, just dabbling into, oh, maybe we should raise money, or oh, maybe we should, take this up a notch. And I've heard the message from a few people that, either funding agencies or people who might be interested in investing in the company, if we're going to raise capital, well, Brian, we kind of want you working at this full tilt. If we're gonna, we don't want this to be a. I don't want to invest my money if this is going to be a side hustle for you. 15, 20 hours a week, that you're doing kind of as a passion project. So I still haven't broken through that yet. I've always wanted, and I still plan on working clinically to some extent. Whether that's 60%, 50%, 40%, 30%, I don't know. If this got some traction and took off a bit more, I would cut back my clinical work a bit more, dedicate more to this, but that's I think that struggle is probably universal, how to dedicate the time.
Yeah,
And then,
time is the only unrenewable resource, that's for sure, right? And especially you've got three kids and a wonderful wife, and yeah, it's a balancing act. Are you surprised at how I know you're I guess you said you were surprised at how much total work it would take. Are you surprised with the constant balancing act over a very long period of time now?
I mean, it's been, I mean, anyone holding a job, raising kids, trying to be a parent who's around and present, and we're always balancing stuff. Throwing this into the mix, and I would say I was pretty good, probably, you know, at work-life balance, you know, before this. I definitely approached this project as I'm not doing this just evenings and weekends. You know, I'm cutting back clinically, you know, on my work significantly, and I'm going to work, you know, predominantly the work on this project is going to be Monday to Friday, you know, 8 to 4 while the kids are at school, while I'm not in the hospital in the operating room. It certainly encroached on my evenings and weekends, you know, at various times over the last 5 years. And then I pull back a little bit, and then it, you know, we're building up to some new piece and it encroaches some more as I'm approaching a deadline. And then I pull back a little bit. It's a constant balancing act. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about the family and the time. What about your peers, right? You come from an industry that, you know, follows a well-researched book, so to speak, you know, on how to make decisions and how to take care of patients and everything. How have your peers accepted this? And I know that you've been on a regular speaking engagement tour recently, which is, you know, I've seen really light you up. So I'm very happy about that for you. And it's a fairly, you know, prehabilitation still somewhat in its infancy stage in the world. So, you know, all the work that you've done in the last 5 years, you probably are close to the global expert on the topic, which is amazing for your future speaking career. But like, how are your peers accepting or not accepting of what you're doing?
So a few things come to mind when you bring that up, Ben. The first, this is a little different than what we normally do, as you mentioned. So it's a little stretch to think of, you know, going online, offering a program that ultimately someone pays for, either the patient themselves or a family member, or, you know, a third party payer that we're pursuing, maybe the local hospital or maybe insurance provider, you know, in time, that would be ideal. And then to sort of build a program like this online that's dispersed across the country or continent, it's just different. And we're you know, medical sort of us, we're very slow to change. In general, I think we're slow to adopt to the digital technologies. You know, we're concerned about privacy issues. We're concerned about being sued. It's definitely, some people view this as a major risk. I view this as a you know, calculated risk in terms of, you know, for me, not, I mean, there's the risk there that the venture will make it or not, but the risk of, you know, people and, you know, I hear from my peers, you know, what if you're sued? You know, what if someone gets in? Injured, you know, what if someone from another country, what if, so there's sort of that aspect that people are just, I would say they love the idea. Like, yes, we can do better with delivering medical care. Yes, there's so many inefficiencies in the system, you know, good for you, Brian. I wouldn't have the kahunas to do it sort of thing. I hear a bit of that.
Okay.
I would also say, you know, we're very, you know, we're an evidence-based medicine, sort of, this is a new field in medicine, and the evidence is evolving. The evidence is looking good, but it's very preliminary at this point. And some of the doctors have sort of brought that up as well. And my sort of thoughts on that are, you know, if I was promoting a new medication, I would clearly need to be further along, you know, before I could pitch this idea to doctors, you know, you might want to try this with your patients. But, you know, ultimately, we're talking about exercise. You know, a recent review I read recently showed, you know, there's over 1,000 randomized controlled trials on the benefits of exercise. I don't think I need to pitch the benefits of exercise to anyone. We're talking about eating healthy food. We're talking about stress reduction. We're talking about, you know, getting a good night's sleep. I don't feel bad if the evidence is a little, you know, weak in certain areas. Like, if you're having a particular type of surgery and you're 68 years old and you have these medical conditions, you know, we'll do in a prehab program, you know, guarantee, or is there solid evidence that, you know, complications will be decreased, you know, in the first month after surgery? No, certainly not for every age category and every cohort of patient and every surgery. Absolutely not. You know, in general, is there a good signal there? Yes. You know, in general, have we seen in all the studies we've had to date any harm from these interventions? No. So, you know, using this golden opportunity, you know, this sort of sense of urgency, you know, as a motivating factor to, you know, show people and help guide them onto a different, healthier, you know, path through life, you know, with, you know, weaker evidence for the outcome, you know, post-operative outcomes. I think we're fine with that. But some of the other physicians, you know, would want to see a bit more evidence before, you know, they would present it. So I do hear that sometimes as well. In general, the concept of empowering patients, offloading some of the work we do to them, you know, and you know, the general concept, when I explain it to physicians like this, like, hey, we're really just promoting nutrition. Like I've heard nothing but positive feedback that, you know, and the physicians who have heard me speak, you know, have actually, you know, I've gone to a few hospitals and stuff. You know, we're asking them to hand it. We're giving the program away for free now as we get more people through it so we can study it more. And I'm not getting resistance to that. So that's a very good sign that, you know, going back, I mentioned earlier about the sort of lean approach and validating some of, you know, are we on the right track, or, you know, did I really miss something here? No, everyone's giving me, you know, good feedback that we're on the right track here. You know, can we pull this off as a viable business, you know, venture? Who knows? There's still lots of factors there, but, you know, is the timing right? Yeah, maybe we're too early. You know, can we market this appropriately? I don't know. You know, can we, more to be revealed, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. And thank you for sharing, everything you just said about how, you know, the medical system and your peers are feeling about it. There's some things that I had never even heard before. So that's great. So
it's okay.
Okay. Good for me to hear. So thank you for sharing that. So before we go, I have one more question, but I will let everybody know, all the listeners, to check the show notes. I will make sure that we link up prehabmd.com, which is where you can find all the information about prehabilitation. There's all sorts of free tools there. If you know anybody that is having major surgery, you know, share the link with them, and they can get a little bit of education, some value, and some support for them or their family members to make sure that things go as well as possible. As you said, Brian, it's a planned car accident. I've heard you say it before. It always sticks with me. So we will make sure that we link all of that up. And last question, because you're now kind of, you've gone through the early phases of building a product, and now you're already starting to test it with customers and get feedback from doctors, so you've been through that. So you have some advice you could give to people in the early stages of starting a company, especially maybe somebody that didn't come from the business world. I know that you love to study. I know that you love reading books and resources, and you are like a lifetime learner across the board in so many areas. It's probably that curiosity we talked about at the beginning. Are there any resources or books that you would suggest to somebody that is maybe not from the business community, starting a side hustle, midpoint of their life, that they should look into? You mentioned the Lean Startup. Is there anything else?
I mean, at this stage, the sort of stage I'm at now, there's a fantastic book. You recommended it, Ben, Traction.
Oh, yeah.
And it is my guiding light right now. So this is a book about, it's written for someone at the stage I'm at right now.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, you've launched, you have something you're trying to get out in the world, and there's different strategies that you can do that. And this book sort of lays out all kinds of the common strategies and some uncommon ones too. And then talks about really, you know, with the least amount of time and the least amount of money, you know, let's test, you know, pick the strategies you think that's going to work best, you know, and you know, test one of them, put a bit of money and a bit of time, you know, set some parameters, you know, for the test itself. If it's working, you know, carry on. If it's not working, you know, as soon as you can, stop and jump onto another traction channel, you know, and we're in the middle of that right now, you know, trying to find our sort of our market. And it's a nice, easy read. That's the one I would recommend, you know, to people at this phase, the product market fit, you know, the valley of death, trying to get across that. For people who are sort of, you know, middle aged, you know, me, you, you know, looking for, you know, maybe they've, you know, been in their current career for 20, 25 years. I really, really, really like the book From Strength to Strength. And it talks about, I read it after I'd started this venture, and I'm like, my goodness, that's exactly what I did and what happened to me. And that's about how to gracefully approach the second half of your life, you know, when the horsepower up here, you know, if you're in the sort of thinking professions, or if you're in the, you know, athletic professions, or the, you know, you're a professional musician and things are, you know, you're past your peak. It's how to gracefully jump on to another wonderful curve for the second half of your life. That's a book by Arthur Brooks, From Strength to Strength. And those are sort of, yeah, those are the two that come to mind right now, Ben.
Okay. We'll link all of those up in the show notes. Ryan, it has been a joy having this conversation with you. I have known you for quite a while. We have had many conversations. I look forward to all the ones in the future, but I also learned a couple new things today. So super valuable for me and I'm, all of our listeners, I'm sure will love it. And there will be some that will resonate with you very, very deeply. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Ben, for having me. You've always been my mentor through this. I never mentioned this earlier in the show, but as we trudge through this arena, you know, the doer of deeds.
Yeah. I might have to edit that part.
It's been a pleasure being at your side and having you as part of this.
Anyways, thank you very much. Thank you for not only joining us today on the Core Health Collective show, but also thank you for being an entrepreneur looking to make the world a better place.